You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Perrin. Coming up, how should news media outlets cover the 2024 presidential election and the stakes of that election with former President Donald Trump as a candidate in particular? We'll talk to a journalist and media critic about what he's seeing and reading so far. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a poem about coming together despite differences.
Sports have a special way of bringing a diverse group of people together, even if the fans aren't rooting for the same team. Dr. Arif Ahmed reflects on a cricket tournament in Madison where the pregame jitters were high. It wasn't necessarily because of the game itself, but because of the countries many of the players came from, India and Pakistan. The writer and cardiologist shares a poem about that day.
32 expatriates, Pakistanis and Indians, against a nuclear standoff. March 2019. For Pakistanis and Indians everywhere and in the U.S., in a week of seesaw diplomacy and unsettling war games, I am nervous. An ongoing cricket tournament in Madison, Wisconsin, USA, where Indians and Pakistanis mix up and play. Though I was nervous with more questions than answers, more doubts than convictions. Not for the game, but for the gamesmanship. Would we still come together to play or cancel and stay in our respective bubbles? And just like that, the night came and passed. We did gather and play, all trying and going out of their way to be more gracious, more generous, acutely aware of our global citizenship, this one big mother village, our interdependence, 32 expatriates, Pakistanis and Indians, against the odds, playing cricket over war, choosing team play, and maintaining discourse. Talking with a bat and a ball, we played for peace, yes, peace for all.
Dr. Arif Ahmed of Madison shared that writing about finding harmony through a game of cricket in Madison. After recording his poem, he told me a bit more about his love of cricket.
Well, growing up, this is a sport which has been around the longest. And you know who taught us cricket? The English. When British ruled over subcontinent India and Pakistan, they brought cricket with, and that's how they taught us cricket.
What do you love about the sport?
It's a good sport. It's a fair sport. It gives you a good balance. It's an English version of baseball, and I just like it. I never thought about why I loved it. Yeah, this is the first time I'm thinking about why do I love cricket. Well, I just like it.
So can you talk about the day of this cricket tournament and why it inspired you to write this poem?
So this was a time of a tense standoff between India and Pakistan, who are both neighbors and both are nuclear armed. And we were playing this tournament here, and it was a tense time. It was all over the international news because these two nuclear armed nations are at each other's throat and not backing off. So that's when this piece came about. And the more I think about it, the more I realize that religion, race, region, how can we fight over these things which we don't choose but are born into? And another important concept which I bring out is peace for all. You know, it's a very basic, just like a good air, good quality water. Peace for all is a very basic human need.
Dr. Arif Ahmed is a writer and cardiologist from Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
This is Central Time. We're a week away from the Iowa Republican Caucus, the first formal event on this year's presidential election year political calendar. Former President Donald Trump was in Iowa over the weekend giving speeches at two events on January 6th, 3 years after hundreds of his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol in a violent effort to block the certification of his 2020 election loss. President Joe Biden spent his first campaign event this weekend near Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, starkly framing what he sees as the stakes of the 2024 election.
Just one day before January 6th, a date forever seared in our memory because it was on that day that we nearly lost America, lost it all. Today, we're here to answer the most important of questions. Is democracy still America's sacred cause?
Our next guest says the media needs to rethink the way it's been covering political campaigns and highlight the stakes in the 2024 election. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How well do you think news outlets have been covering the election campaign so far? Is there something about former President Trump that requires, you think, a different kind of media coverage of his statements, his speeches, and more? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on political information and covering political misinformation as well. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dan Frumkin has had a three-decade career in journalism, serving as the senior Washington correspondent and bureau chief for The Huffington Post, as editor of WashingtonPost.com, and as deputy editor of NiemannWatchdog.org. He founded and currently edits the political journalism intervention website, PressWatch, online at PressWatchers.org. Dan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. I'm happy to be here.
We're in a new year. The election season is officially kicking off soon. You've been watching political coverage, critiquing political coverage for a long time. Sum up what you see as the state of political media at this critical moment.
Well, I think, you know, the important thing to keep in mind is this is not a normal candidate. It's not a normal campaign. It's not a normal election. And the normal coverage rule. The good news from my perspective is that I've sensed a bit of a tonal shift in the output of our major news organizations. Since Trump referred to his political enemies as vermin who need to be rooted out, and also after he talked about immigrants poisoning the blood of the country, these are the words of a real authoritarian person. These are words that are redolent with the fascists of the 20th century. And I think the coverage has gotten less both sidesy. What I mean by that is that typically, you know, in political journalism, it's been a safe bet that you say, here's what one candidate says, here's what the other candidate says, and you decide. They were operating within a sphere of normality where they were arguing about things that were arguable, not about facts. Now we have, you know, a candidate who tried to steal the presidency the last time around, who lies about it, and whose whole campaign really is based on retribution for the alleged act of his being stolen, you know, his having the presidency stolen away from him. And I think that the coverage needs to be much clearer about how these two candidates are coming from very different relationships with the truth, and how reporters probably need to take sides in a way that they're not entirely comfortable doing.
Now, Dan, some people listening, when you say that former President Trump is a different type of candidate that requires a different type of coverage, they're agreeing with you absolutely. Other people might be thinking, well, you know, he talks differently. He's got a big mouth maybe, but at core, he's a politician who, you know, takes political stances, isn't really that different. Speak to that second group. Try to make that case to bring him on board with your concept.
Yeah, I mean, I think I come to this from a journalist perspective. I'm interested in who's telling me the truth, who's operating in good faith. I'm not looking at it as a partisan, saying what party do I prefer. I'm looking at a president who's basing his whole campaign on this central lie that he didn't that he won in 2020 when he obviously did not. There is huge amounts of incontrovertible evidence that he lost the 2020 election. And to be suggesting that that's not true offends me as a journalist. And I think it ought to offend anybody who cares about the truth. Similarly, he's facing, you know, these 91 felony counts of very serious crimes that would have, would probably have gotten anybody thrown into prison by now, anybody else. I think that he's also advocating for a kind of divisiveness, and that's really inimical to the American tradition. I mean, he's talking about dividing immigrants from citizens, and this talk about poisoning the blood is really dangerous, and strikes me as very un-American.
Let's talk about what this kind of media coverage could look like. We've had, you know, people worry about horse race journalism when we talk about the polls. Maybe a more substantive type of journalism is, okay, the Republican says this about this issue, the Democrat says this about this issue. You're looking for something different than both of those. What would you like to see?
Well, mostly what I think we should be focusing on is how would these people govern differently? I don't think, you know, saying, reporting every single day, rehashing the facts of the 2020 election is going to be particularly compelling. But you can look at what these people are saying they're going to do and what from their record they have already done. And in particular, looking at the stakes around democracy and around this notion that votes matter, that people ought to vote, that people's votes ought to be taken seriously. And I just sort of think that there's a wonderful phrase that has been coined by a journalism professor named Jay Rosen, which is report about the stakes, not the odds. So write about what is at stake, not just what they're saying and who said what and what have you, especially when some of what is being said is lies.
We're talking to longtime journalist, now current media critic, Dan Frohmken, founder and editor of PressWatchers.org. We're talking to Dan about the job he thinks the news media have done and should do, covering former President Donald Trump's campaign in particular, hopes he has for 2024 campaign coverage. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guests? Which news outlets do you think are doing a great, good, okay, terrible job covering this election season? What do you want out of the media, whichever media you follow, when it comes to covering this presidential campaign? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Dan Frohmken stays with us, founder and editor of PressWatchers.org. He has advice for the political media when it comes to 2024 presidential election coverage. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Yordis is with us in Colfax. Yordis, hi.
Hi. I think he should be treated as an unhinged man, a mentally disturbed personality, and that there should be more investigative journalism using history professors and people that have knowledge of dictatorships around the world to sort of inform people about these dangers. It's like a cult that is around Trump, and maybe some news organizations could talk about the elements of a cult and how this is very similar and very, very dangerous.
Yordis, thanks for the call. Dan Yordis offering a few different, I guess we could call them, frames for ways to cover former President Trump. Your thoughts on what she had to say?
I think she's absolutely right. I think historians right now are extremely important people for journalists to be talking to, especially those who have experience with authoritarian regimes, with them coming into power and holding power and on occasion losing power. There are several who are now getting a lot more attention from journalists because what they can do is they can provide this frame where you can see that a lot of what Donald Trump is doing is right out of the authoritarian playbook when it comes to attacking the press or threatening political opponents or attacking companies that do him wrong. I mean, a lot of this can be seen almost most clearly by historians.
Thanks for that call, Yordis. Tom joins us now in Madison. Tom, hi.
Well, hello. I was wondering, I have a friend who told me about 2,000 Mules by Dinesh D'Souza, a video, and I guess it's a book, that shows how the election was stolen from Trump. What is your reaction to that? Have you heard of it? And could you react to that?
Tom, thanks for the call. Oh, go ahead, Dan. Yeah.
No. I mean, I've heard of it. It's a famous article in the sort of conspiracy theory arsenal. It's all untrue. It's been debunked many, many times by actual journalists who are doing actual journalism. The election was not stolen. I know it's hard sometimes for journalists to say that for risk of offending folks who don't believe it. But that's, you know, our job is to stick with the truth, whether or not it offends people.
Thanks for the call, Tom. And that brings up a couple points, Dan. We've seen over the last, 20 years or so, the rise of fact-checking, either in independent institutions, within particular news outlets as well. Do fact-checking efforts like that matter? Do you see them making a difference?
I mean, I admire the theory behind fact-checking and the people who do it. But no, I think it's been a disaster. And I think part of it is because what's happened is, over the years, as lies have become more and more central to our politics, journalists thought fact-checking took care of it, so they didn't need to do it in their main story. So they'd still write a main story just like they used to. This person says that person says this, and you decide. And then a few days later, there's a fact-check saying, well, actually, this person was wrong and this person was right. I think what we need right now is fact-checking in the main story. I think sometimes the lying is the most important story. There is a thing in journalism called the truth sandwich, which suggests that when you have to write about something that's a lie, you don't repeat the lie initially. You first state the truth, then you repeat the lie, and then you explain why the lie is not true. So that kind of coverage as the main story is, I think, is essential. Fact-checking, unfortunately, I think has been a distraction from that.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Chris is with us now in Fairchild. Hi, Chris.
Hi. First off, I second, I guess, this motion here of having responsible reporting, and I would like to believe that that's incumbent upon all reporters to do such a job that is representative of them by telling the truth. But just second to that, I would like to add that it is responsible upon the consumer of such information to be civically engaged. And the consumer also has some responsibility, if you will, to be engaged and to at least have some basis, in fact, to, when they hear these stories, to make a reasonable inference.
Chris, thanks for the call. Dan.
Yeah, I mean, if I could change one thing with the magic wand, it would be to make everybody who consumes the media more critical, more skeptical of what they're hearing, and to demand to know the underpinnings of what they're being told and what they're reading. I think an informed electorate is not simply taking in stuff and accepting it as it is. It's digesting it and making sense of it. And I hope we have a resurgence of that kind of critical reading and civic civil literacy.
Chris, thanks for the call. Dan, one big question. Even if the mainstream media, however we want to define that, does everything you're hoping for, we seem to have a separate alternative media infrastructure ecosystem where, say, a tweet might go out and then Washington Post reported the Gateway Pundit picks it up and then One America News runs it with it from there. And a news consumer can have all of that and not care whether the Washington Post or New York Times or their local paper is getting things right.
Yeah, no, that's a tremendous challenge for people, you know, for reality-based journalists everywhere, is that there's this huge ecosystem that's pumping disinformation and misinformation into the political sphere. There's no easy answer to that. One answer, though, is to radically report and yell out the truth and do it as energetically and as entertainingly as the folks at places like Newsmax and One America News and Gateway Pundit. I think that we need to take joy in pointing out when they are misleading people, just like they take joy in misleading people.
And Dan, in just our last half a minute or so, do you feel optimistic that the media can get it right in 2024?
Yes and no. I used to think this was a generational challenge and wasn't gonna get solved for many years. But I'm seeing resistance within the newsrooms themselves, even. People who are doing great work in investigative and international coverage and other areas like that, I think are getting a little bit fed up with the political coverage that just sort of tries to split the difference between two things that are not equal.
Dan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Dan Frumkin, founder and editor of PressWatchers.org. We talked to him today about how he thinks the news media are doing covering former President Trump's campaign for a second term and his hopes for coverage of the 2024 presidential race. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, how about school with no grades? Find out why a Wisconsin district is at least experimenting with a plan to try getting rid of letter grades, what it could mean for kids along the way. And the U.S.-Mexico border is getting a lot of attention as an election year kicks off. We'll find out what's actually happening at the border and the options available for the White House and for Congress. You can get us started right now on either of those topics with your questions for our guests or your thoughts. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or send us a message via the Ideas Network Facebook page. Then you can join those conversations tomorrow and call in while they're happening in real time as well. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.